a choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Welcoming to the show, Stellium 7. Dude, it is so cool to hang out with you. Mike Wilkerson, everybody, linked down below, all the ways to find him, his YouTube, all of that good stuff. We have some mutual friends, actually. Tam Cheville, you had on a drink from her cup. She sent me, actually, Charismic in her. And you had him on your Connecting the Dots about Flat Earth and all kinds of cool shit. So anyway, we have a mutual friend. She was very excited to hear that you were going to be coming hanging out with us. And I've mentioned you many times on the show. In many afterthoughts, we have all sat there in groups and oogled over your YouTube. I pull it up and I'm like, dude, check this out. And we go nuts over it. So again, it's so cool to get to hang out with you, my friend. You're over there in Spain. We're going to let you kind of tell a little bit about yourself, but just a reminder again for the audience, all the ways to find him, link down below. Super grateful. Stellium, how are you, brother?
Good, good. Shout out to Tam and Connecting the Dots with Richard Lopez. He was the first one who ever interviewed me, actually.
Very cool. He's an OG, man. Yeah. And then Don Lester, of course, is the one that connected us. So shout out Don Lester.
Shout out to Don as well.
That's a cool place, man. We have so many great friends that just like are happy that we get to hang out. And they're like, you two should get together and talk. And then they want to. It's amazing. Like,
yeah, I got to hang out with Don in Mexico now and in Serbia and in Northern California, Music and Sky. So I'm going to be going in September to London to, she's putting on a conference there and I'll be speaking at that. So
that's right. That's so cool, man. I love this. We're going to be joining you guys for these at some point. She's already mentioned her Confluence. She's already booked a room up here with us. I'm going to go pick her up on the 12th when we'll be getting back from Florida 2 days before that. We're going to pick her up and bring her back up here to North Texas. It's like a 4.5 hour drive. So we get a little road trip through the hill country and then we come up here and hang out and we'll probably shoot fireworks again because we shot fireworks with this beautiful Brit in our driveway on 4th of July last time. And it was just a really beautiful, poetic, awesome moment, you know?
She has a head of hair that looks like fireworks.
Oh, she's a delight, dude. And I tell her she's like a dawn. When she got in my life, she's like a dawn of a new day. You know, she's just so beautiful and innocent and wonderful and perfect. We love you, Dawn. All right, check out her book, Where It Really Makes You Ill. We're going to give her one more plug here, actually. Boom. Guys.
Got that one.
Come on.
That should be on your shelf.
Oh, everybody's. It's right here within reach, you know? I'm like, I reference it. I'm like, no way. I didn't know that. So, okay. I believe it. All right, man. But thank you again to all the people that have connected us and our mutual friends. We have so many. So we'll just skip. We'll just say and everyone. But dude, to move on here, tell the audience, if you don't mind, sir, just a little bit about you, man. And then you and I are going to have this badass talk about the cool shit that you do, dude.
Little about me. Okay. The short version. I'm a chiropractor. I work in Spain. I've been here for 13 years. I trained in Sweden, where I lived for 10 years. Before that, I was an exchange student in Italy. In my teens, I was a hacker. I got busted for hacking as a teenager and ended up going to jail for that, of all things.
Do you mind if I ask what you hacked? Was it anything worth the shit?
I broke into Microsoft, Sunstrand, Kenworth Trucking, and a subsidiary of Boeing.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, dude, you're like the movie, you know? That's cool.
Yeah, the movie came out after me.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
I got busted in 85, but when the movie came out, you're talking about War Games, I'm guessing.
Yeah, War Games.
When War Games came out, that was 1983, and I had already been hacking for a couple of years at that point, so. A lot of people have asked me if that movie was based on me, but it wasn't. But there's definitely parallels. And it was an interesting chapter of my life. I've written a book. I'm publishing it this year. I'm sending it off in the next week or two to a proofreader. And my hope is to have it out maybe in time for a Confluence, that would be fun. I'd like to go to the States and actually do a like an interview tour on that subject. And so we'll see if I can get my shit together. This is the 40 year anniversary of my bust, so I've kind of dragged my heels a little bit on that.
It's an interesting cycle, though. You know, I don't know about dragged heels. You've let it marinate long enough to where now you're ready, you know? And when you come back through the States, let us know, man. Like I said, you know, come hang out. It'll be fun.
Yeah. So you're in Texas.
Yep. North Texas. Yeah.
Cool.
Not the panhandle. Right. We don't call that North Texas. That's way up there. You know what I'm talking about, panhandle. It shouldn't be up there, Texas. North Texas is the top part before it janks up and goes and encroaches on Oklahoma.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what else? 10 years ago, I met a guy named Alex Michael, conspiracy music guru. Shout out to him. He's my best friend. Lives here in the same town as me. And we just were checking off all kinds of boxes when it came to different things that we dug into, you know, in the realm of conspiracy. And at one point, he asked me if I'd dug into the whole Earth shape topic, and I thought he was a nutcase at that point, despite having you know, checked off all the boxes before that. And so, yeah, he really got me looking at the whole world through different eyes. And when I started to actually test things and to go into them deeply, didn't come out the way that I expected. And it was a rabbit hole that never ended. And so I was always enamored of the scientific method. I had, like, I've studied chiropractic. I have a master's degree in that, and always interested in you know, approaching things in a very analytical, logical way, while also being intuitive. I would say I'm, one of my gifts is pattern recognition, and so as I dug into all of these subjects, it just opened up more and more doors. And that's how we got here. And I started after the Earth shape topic came up, I just was like, well, what else are we being told lies about? I don't know what the shape is. I'm not making any positive claims about what it is, but I know what it isn't, and what it isn't is what they're telling us. And, so then I started to look at everything with new eyes, and that led to the research that is why we'll be talking today.
Dude, it is so cool. So fascinating. First of all, thank you for telling us all about your journey and how you came to be. And yes, we've got Alex coming up on the show. Actually, we're very excited about that. Super cool, dude. Another connection through Dawn. So Dawn's just like, here. It's amazing. and the way that this community questions is my favorite thing ever, because we're not making like, this is what's going on. We're saying like, hey, it's not that, but here's what I see. And this is one of my favorite things ever, because it doesn't mean, Mark Gober has a wonderful analogy on this. He's like, when you wake up in the morning and the grass is wet, and someone says it rained last night, that's not the only option, right? It could have been dewy. The sprinklers could have gone off. A kid could have come by with a bucket, as ridiculous as that seems, and made that wet, right? There are many possibilities. So just because we say it's not round doesn't mean we have to come up with an explanation of what it is. We're just helping move in the right direction by saying it's not what they are saying it is. And it's a beautiful thing to destroy that paradigm.
Unicorn piss.
Unicorn piss is another one. Throw it on always. The pile, you know.
Always
default to that. I love it. Okay. Unicorn piss. Love it. Okay, so let's definitely get into your work here, man, because we've got a lot to talk about here. Your amazing YouTube is going to be linked down below, guys, so definitely get into that. I want to first ask you a question. Petrified coochies and due diligence. That was a question.
That's not a question.
Sorry.
That's a statement.
Okay, my apology. Petrified coochies and due diligence.
Right. Well, I think there was another. Was that the whole title of that video?
It was actually. Yeah. I didn't see any subtitle.
That was actually. You know, I suppose I'm best known for the work that I've done on examining a mountain here in Spain, which I believe was a fallen Titan, and I got on that subject about 7 or 8 years ago. There were a variety of different videos that I saw from different channels that had to do with things like instant petrification and mud fossils. Mud fossil theory was something that I came across early on that I found very fascinating. And the guy, Roger Spur, who has that channel, I don't want to speak just disparagingly of him, but he's kind of like a broken clock. He's right, you know, twice a day. And there's a lot of things that he throws out there as unequivocal fact that I think are just harebrained ideas that have no substance. So one of the things that he likes to do is take up pictures of different rock formations that look like vaginas. And he starts analyzing the histology, which is the tissue of the structure that he's looking at, and making claims that, well, it's clearly what it appears to be. And I find that that particular video was me finally just having enough with a lot of the things that he was saying. And so I addressed a lot of the different aspects of his research that I find fault with. And that was after, you know, 6-7 years of just kind of like, all right, let him do his thing. But when he's got a big following and he's championing a lot of ideas that I think are not, they don't hold water.
So. There's a difference between
due diligence is that we should all be doing our due diligence rather than just thinking something is something, making a claim about it. You got to actually dig into it and research it before making outlandish claims. So outlandish claims require outlandish evidence.
And
most people out there are just pointing and claiming. So they find pictures of different Titanic creatures. You know, they'll look at a mountain and they'll turn it on its side. So they're looking at a skyline, basically, of a mountain range that looks like a face. And they just assume that's a Titan laying on its back. You can see the faces there. There's the nose, there's the mouth. And if they flip that the other direction, they'd probably see an entirely different face. So a lot of what is out there and being presented by people as just hard fact is really, in my opinion, pareidolia, which is when you misrecognize something. You look up at a cloud, you see a shape or a face or an animal, and you think that's really up there. You know, that's pareidolia. And so that's what that title was about.
Well, it's a fine line, right? And this is the next question, man. What's the difference between pareidolia and the research that you do to where you are able to reveal that this giant structure is probably once living?
Yeah, well, it's how methodical are you? Are you just looking at something that looks like something, or are you getting in there physically and analyzing it and comparing it to anatomy, comparing it to histology, which would be the tissue? And showing that there isn't just a few correlations that make it look like it, but lots. And the reason I got on this whole subject was after being exposed to the mud fossil theory and some people might be familiar with the No Forests on Flat Earth video that surfaced about 8 years ago. Basically looking at the plateaus around the world that look a lot like tree stumps, and showing all the different ways in which it actually lines up with tree anatomy. And that was an amazing idea for me. And I started to look at the whole landscape with different eyes after that. And to me, a lot of people, that's already enough for them to be on board. And it is that. If something looks a certain way, it has to be that. And I think that we need to take a step back when we start thinking, yes, it is something 1,000%, you're probably wrong. And you might need to take a step back and analyze it. So I did that. I got out. There's a mountain here in Spain that looks like an elephant. And it's in this town that I live in. And I've been hiking it for years and I've been looking at it. And I always loved it. And it's known affectionately here in the area as the elephant. There's even a restaurant named after it called the Elephant. And I never once for a moment considered that maybe it was, you know, and that's a silly idea. Even if you're into things like flat earth, something like that, it's a stretch. And so I got on Google Earth. I started looking around from lots of different angles. You can tilt it on Google Earth and see in 3D. And, And I, within an hour, had a list of like 10 or 12 different things that lined up with the anatomy of at least a vertebrate. It doesn't have to be an elephant, but like there's a big deep canyon right between where the legs would be, that eye, there's a cave right where the eye should be in relationship to the head. It's shaped like an eye socket. It's got this, you know, elephants don't have an eyebrow, but it's got that eyebrow ridge where it should be. And I'd been in that cave many times and always marveled over how unusual it was, and couldn't quite figure out how does something like this form. And so when I came across these ideas in this story, what if, that was when I thought, okay, I'm going to get out my anatomy books and I'm going to look at eye sockets. And I got online with 3D anatomy renderings where you can actually go inside of an eye socket and look at it from different angles. And it started off really with, after seeing the macro correlations, my next step was the eye, because I'd been up there. And I thought, okay, I know that vertebrates have 7 different bones that comprise this eye socket that the eye sits in. And those bones meet in different places. Those meeting points are called sutures. And so you have the meeting points, and then you have different fissures where things like the optic nerve and different blood vessels go. And those are in very, very specific places. And the bone structure of different creatures changes dramatically. You look at the skull of an elephant, it's very different from the skull of a bear, but we all have more or less the same bones that are making that skull. And though when it comes to the eye socket, it's very specific. And so I had this laundry list, and I went up there again, and I was like, I'm going to document this, because this is just, there's no way this could be real, you know? And I got up there and I already had a list of about 10 coincidences. And then after that day up in the cave, I took photographs, I had video, and I had a list of another 10 after this, you know, the second day of analysis. And that was, it gets into probability and what are the odds of something, and how specific is it also? You know, if it's highly specific, every time you add something that's highly specific to a list of anomalous correlations, it gets more and more far-fetched that it's just by chance or just a random occurrence. And so that's how I was looking at it, like probability and specificity. And yeah, it changed my life, you know, asking these questions, like, be careful what rabbit holes you go down, because you may never get out of them.
Yes, your reality can be expanded too far. Yeah. And then you just take a break, sit down, take a deep breath, you'll grow into it. But man,
one of the slides in my presentations is, you know, don't open your brains, your mind so far that your brain falls out.
Fog. That's a great point. Also, the inverse is true. Attempting to introduce large ideas to small minds, right?
That's not always easy.
No. We find this pretty prolific. If anyone's ever talked to their mom, you know, there you go. Interesting.
What's interesting to me is how many people in the truth community, if you can call it that, are often, you know, extremely closed-minded to certain ideas. They'll be totally open to the most far-fetched ideas you can imagine. And then certain things are just like, no, no way. And they'll just write it off without even looking more closely at it. And that's been the case with a lot of prominent quote unquote truthers when it comes to my work. And I know that they haven't dug into what I've done or analyzed it because of the kinds of criticisms they're raising or the questions they're asking. I can see that they don't even know what's been presented.
Do you feel the need to correct them?
Not really. I've been, you know, attacked by some of the channels. Like Simon Dan once made a video about me, and I got a two or three week wave of hatred from his subscribers. It was thousands of comments, and I had a whole rebuttal planned, and I was just gonna tear him a new one. But I, in the end, I was like, it's not worth it. The guy's a total asshole. And so I'm just like, I just put it on ice. And it wasn't until Alex came out with the video Space Cunt that I finally gave him a rebuttal. And I just sent him the link, which lasted about a day on his channel. Yeah. He was the inspiration for that song, actually. We were he and I and Steve Falconer were sitting around. They got a couple of songs in the bag. Steve came to visit, and they're both amazing musicians. And they did a song called "You'll Wake Up Someday," which was really, they worked hard on that. And I was there filming, and they finally got it all perfect in one take. And we went out to celebrate with some cognac and some smoke. And we started talking about these different kinds of people that are constantly attacking the, I don't know what it is. I always hesitate to use the word community because it doesn't feel like one. But, you know, they're straw manning there. It's just one logical fallacy after another. It's ad hominems. It's appeals to ridicule. These are people that are claiming to champion the scientific method, and they're just absolute punks, you know. And so at one point, the word space cunt came to mind. And then the next thing that popped into my head was the song by Tom Jones, you know, Sex Bomb.
Fuck yeah.
And so I just blurted out, you know, space cunt, space. And we were in tears over that. And then we started just throwing out lines, and over the next 3 hours we finished writing the lyrics to that song. And Alex made the song in 2 days, but he spent 2 months on the video. So if you haven't seen that video, warning, it's, you know, it's not the, I mean, as an American 10 years ago, I would not have used that word in this stream at all, because it's considered to be so, you know, it's the worst thing you can say in the US, basically. It's like, is there any word that's more, that, you know, more demonized than that one?
And I can think of a few.
But after 10 years of being friends with Alex, you know, he's from the UK, and they use that one like it's almost as common as "and." And so it was a funny thing. So that's how that came about. And it was the perfect response. It took like 5 years to get around to it. But
yep,
no, I don't normally bother with the haters or the, if people come with actual, you know, real criticisms, then I'll address them. I'm not afraid to answer. I don't just delete comments if they're negative. But I mean, if people lead with insults and they don't have anything of value to say, then I'll delete the comment. But
I let it sit there, and it's so awesome. I let it just sit and marinate, and everybody likes all the nice things around it, and they leave that one there, and just to let it sit there and look like the sad little thing that it is. I don't delete it because I think hurt people hurt people, and maybe that's their only forum to be able to talk. Plus, most of them aren't fucking real, but they never get my attention ever. I stay out of the comments, and that's one of my biggest things for anybody wanting to do something like this. Stay the fuck out of the comments. Most of them aren't real, and if they want you, your email is in the show description. The real ones will email you. There you go. That's how I feel about it. Case closed. Good or bad, I love you guys for running it, and if I see one that's sweet, I'll heart it real quick, move on. But most of the time, I'm not in them. I'm doing other shit. You know, Mike, like you, dude, we've got other things for our energy.
You're prolific. I don't know how people have time for it all. I'm coming out of a hibernation period right now. I just took a few months off.
I'm telling you, I just put drips in a bucket, and then that was it. But I took my time. Yeah. It's all good. It's a fucking minefield, man, and it's navigable. But like you said, it's part of the challenge is to go, what do I dedicate my attention to? And it's beautiful the way you put it. Haters don't get it. You know, I'll leave it there because, again, you know, if you need a place to voice your opinion, okay, have at it. But it's going to sit there unliked, and people, you're going to dance around it, and you can watch us all party, but yeah, and you're welcome to join it, man. Come at the right energy, right? And that's all we encourage here. And so that's all, like, I give attention to is the right energy, which is why it's just not a thing honestly think about. And so it's interesting also to kind of talk to other content creators whenever they come across things like that. Mine, I have a musical inspiration from an old bandmate of mine that held some gear hostage before we had a show, and it was just a whole fucking thing. Cops were called. Anyway, wrote a song about that, and it was the same anger of alchemy, the alchemy of anger, rather. And it's a banger, dude. It's called The Illusion of You, and it's a fucking banger. I'll play it for you sometime. But anyway, it was about that, but it was taking something fucking shitty and making something pretty dope out of it. So I love, again, the alchemy. And it was a team sport, which is even more beautiful.
They hate us because they ain't us.
That's right. Fuck yeah. Yeah. Well, dude, what do you think about getting into some of the work that you do? These mud fossils. I shared a picture that you had about a heart the other day that was a stone heart, and you find these organs and all of this stuff. So I honestly just kind of want you to maybe take us through a little bit of some basics on this. What is biogeology? How did you get interested in this? I mean, again, your lateral, not lateral move, but it seems like you were set up with chiropractic. Is that how you say it?
Chiropractic.
Okay. Your chiropractic work. There we go. And being able to view anatomy a certain way. And now you're stair-stepping and kind of joining these two things, which is fascinating. So what is biogeology? What the hell are we talking about here, bud?
Yeah, if it wasn't for my studies of anatomy and histology, I never would have made these connections. So if I hadn't become a chiropractor, I never would have made these discoveries. And the term biogeology is a term that I appropriated after a while. Initially, I thought these are mud fossils, but then I started to find examples of things that couldn't possibly be mud fossils. For people who don't know, I'll just explain. Mud fossil theory is basically a rapid version of the mainstream story of petrification. Petrification being that everyone knows what a petrified tree is. They tell us they take hundreds of millions of years to form. It started as a tree. Why is it stone now? Well, it's stone because things like silica and lots of other elements slowly work their way into the dead tree over long periods of time. And then in the water, the gas worked its way out. Basically. So you've got this hardening of the material. And the contribution from Roger Spur was this idea that this could happen very quickly in the right circumstances. And he had different theories about what those circumstances were. And for the most part, it was kind of in alignment with the mainstream theories. But he was saying that it happens far more quickly. So he claimed to have been able to petrify a chicken breast within 6 months. So I've never seen evidence of that, but that's what he, you know, has said in his streams. So I thought, okay, 6 months is a big difference from 200 million years, right? So if things can petrify that quickly, we know that gigantism exists, because even in the mainstream narrative, there's megaflora and megafauna. You know, you've got them talking about insects that were a meter long, and trees that were far bigger than what we have now, and animals as well. So that's not such a stretch that maybe a lot of what we see that we call geology was actually biology at one time, but far more recently than what we were taught. In other words, it's not this long drawn out process, but it's something where there's a much more direct connection between the biology and what you're viewing, which is what I always puzzled about, because I've seen lots of rocky structures throughout my life that look like biology. I'm like, wow, that marbling looks like, you know, if you were to slice meat or something, you know, why does it look like that? Oh, it's just the way it formed. Well, maybe not. Maybe it was that, and now it's stone. And so I appreciate the work that Roger did, because he woke me up to those things. But I think sometimes he does a lot more harm than good, because he had some great ideas, but he has presented them in ways that are just really far-fetched and not very substantiated. And so I think anyone who has a background in those kinds of subjects or is just a rational thinker is going to come across those ideas and be like, and push it, you know, push it aside and go, this doesn't make any sense. So the term biogeology is used in the scientific world to describe the exchange of the biosphere with the lithosphere. It's a very small portion of the science that is talking about these subjects. And it's this percolation upward of different materials into the lithosphere. And I thought biogeology is the perfect term for this, because mud fossils may be a thing. I think they are. I think it's one of the ways in which things petrify. And in my presentations, I talk about lots of other methods as well. But in order to distinguish, I think of biogeology as an umbrella term, and it wouldn't be needed if geology was telling us the truth. And I don't think geologists are lying. I think they're just, I coined the term paradigm blindness. I think that all experts in any field, if if the overall field is based on erroneous thinking or lies or faulty science, and they're championing that, they're doing that because that's the paradigm that they were raised in, and they've been taught to see the world through those eyes. So they're blinded by their paradigm. And we all are to one degree or another. I mean, whether it's cosmology or health or all of, you know, it's all paradigm blindness. And so biogeology was a great umbrella term. Mud fossils would be part of that. Then you would have things that have been petrified through electrical activity, things that, through volcanic activity, high mineral content waters, plasma, and we can get into examples of all of those things. And that was what I had no idea about when I first started exploring these subjects, is that there's actually lots of examples of different anomalous finds in the mainstream geological narratives that they actually support these different types of petrification. So that was lots of people fed me things along the way. As I started to do videos, I got great comments from people, and that led to other doors that I opened and walked through. And now it's more cohesive, because biogeology, which wouldn't be needed if geology was telling us the story as it is a great term, at least for the time being, because it distinguishes between hundreds of millions of years and something that was far more directly biology not so long ago. And a lot of times people ask me about dates and how old things are, and I don't have a clue. I know that dating itself is a very sketchy subject, and there's lots of examples of people sending things that they know to be very young. I read something just the other day of that, like, it was igneous stone, which comes from volcano, that they knew was very recent because it was a recent volcanic eruption, and it came back with a date of like 50,000 years. So there's so many examples when it comes to carbon dating and other dating techniques that it's not the be all end all that they would like us to think. And they use those techniques, which are resting on flimsy foundations, as justifications for the age of the Earth, and then ultimately for the heliocentric model and the Big Bang and our 16 plus billion year old universe that they claim to be able to see the beginning of with their telescopes. So that was how the term biogeology came about. I appropriated it from mainstream science because I thought this is a really good way of just describing this phenomenon in a very short way.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's like the PCR test. It's like weaponized incompetence, right?
Yeah. The PCR non-test.
Yeah, there you go. The PCR test. For the audio only, I went like this. My fingers. All right. Again, fascinating, dude. This whole thing just blows my mind. So I just want to, before you keep moving here, how did it feel standing inside something thinking I'm standing inside of something's eye, but it's like a fucking mountain, dude? Like, what does that do psychologically for you?
Have you ever taken acid?
Yes, sir, many times. Okay, so that level of holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best comments I ever had on my channel was a really short comment. I said, your videos are more powerful than psychedelics.
Fucking
because they don't wear off.
That's right.
You know?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so once,
you got to look around and you get to see that.
People
day.
Have gone through, like, there people will be skeptics for the first two or three videos of the Unveiling of Titan series. But if they get through all six of those videos, I've never had anyone come with a laundry list of these are all the things you did wrong and explain this. And the geologists that have like thrown stuff my way, like one geologist, I've done a lot of analysis of bone and looking at what is bone comprised of and what does it look like? You've got long bones in the body, which have compact bone, which is the strong part of the bone. And then internally, you've got this Swiss cheese material that's called trabecular bone. And it literally looks like Swiss cheese. It's fractal. If you look under a microscope, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And inside of that is where our plasma, our red blood cells are created. There's blood plasma, the stem cells are in there. So that all has a very specific makeup and a chemical structure. right? So then I started looking at the mountain through those eyes. And I didn't know this initially as I was doing it, but there's all of the stone on the that the mountain is made of and is littered all around the mountain looks exactly like this. It's these two kinds of stone. They're these thick layers, or it's Swiss cheese. And the Swiss cheese stone, it's all limestone. All of it is limestone. And those fractal holes like you get in Swiss cheese, they're often filled with red earth, iron ore, and yellowish quartz crystal. And that's like the components of blood. you've got literally all of the same components. And what I didn't know until I got into this is limestone. If you look at, you can go to Wikipedia and look at this. Limestone is calcium carbonate. And what they tell us about limestone layers and how they're formed, it takes hundreds of millions of years. It's always, you know, hundreds of millions of years for everything. But basically think of it like this. We have sedimentary layering, which is all the dead plant and animal life, which have just compacted over long periods of time and then slowly hardened because of the pressure. And you can see all the different layers. And then they tell us that tectonic activity is creating mountains because they bang together and then go upward. And then you can see all those layers because you're looking at things from the side, from the edges. And then those break off, and that's where we get our boulders, and then we get our smaller and smaller and smaller rocks. And those go into river bottoms and are bounced around. And there is clearly erosion, you know, that's happening as a result of the water and the sun and everything else. But that's the mainstream narrative. And then as things get pressed even more, it creates pressure and heat. And then that creates what they call metamorphic rock. And metamorphic rock would be like our marble and our granite, the harder stones that look very biological. And so limestone is one of these layers of hardened stone that's made from calcium carbonate. And when you look at the mainstream narrative of how this is said to have formed, they're saying that coral, shellfish, mollusk, and skeleton, endo and exoskeleton, have all compressed for hundreds of millions of years under the ocean floor, under the sedimentary layers, and that's all been compacted into this layer of limestone. And hold on, I keep getting shut down. WhatsApp keeps sending me messages. And it's not even running. What the heck?
Somebody try to shut your message down, you know? Like, stop telling truth.
Settings. Let me just mute this. Where do I mute it?
Just again, guys, all the ways to find him linked down below. Highly recommend his Discovering the Titan series over there. All the videos, go check it out. All linked down below. So cool. It's just fascinating to walk around and think of this stuff. And I'm going to ask you about something called the flesh pit that they found in the afterthought.
Just have to deal with the message. Where were we?
You were crushing it, talking about biogeology.
Yeah. So limestone. So, so I had a geologist that saw one of my videos, and he just was mocking me. He's like, "You are an absolute idiot. There's this, and this, and if you just looked at those limestone layers, you would see that they're made up of shellfish, coral, mollusk, and skeleton." I've been hiking this mountain for years, and I've never seen a hint of any of those things in a single one of those rocks. And so I'm like, okay. So I got online, I'm looking, and I'm like, that's the official narrative. They're literally telling us that this mountain that I think was once a creature is made of bone. And I had no idea until I dug into this. And so I thought, how can I verify this? And I got initially a 60X microscope and went and looked, and there was no hint of any of those things on any of the stone. And so, okay, I'm going to go, and I saw these microscopes online that were 50 euros for 1000X Wi-Fi microscope. So I could use my phone, and I could, you know, and I went back out with 1000X magnification and found no hint of any fragments. Like, if you go to a beach, like I lived in Hawaii, and you could scoop up the sand, and initially it looks like sand, but if you look up close, it's gems, it's crystal, it's glass, it's shells, it's absolutely gorgeous, you know, when you look up close. But, and so I thought that's what I would see. And if I did, it would completely debunk the idea that this was once a creature, because it's not like its bones are going to be made of shell and mollusk and other things, right? So no hint whatsoever. So I literally there is a kind of limestone that's called coquina that is made that way. If you're familiar with Coral Castle in Florida,
yep.
This guy supposedly levitated multi-ton blocks and, you know, built this entire castle by himself. That's all coquina. That's all made of this kind of limestone that is, you can see it with the naked eye. And I've given in my videos lots of examples of photographs of this kind of limestone. So that kind of limestone does exist, but that's not all limestone. And so I went out with this 1000X microscope and completely debunked the mainstream narrative when it comes to limestone and how it's formed, because there should be somewhere some hint of those things, and there isn't. What you have is something that matches bone on a scale that's unfathomable. So that's, you know, when it comes to the critiques, that's the kind of thing that's come along. And I've had many geologists chime in and say, you know what, this makes a lot of sense. In fact, we were talking about sedimentary. Go ahead.
Well, a lot of people will find, like out here in Texas, we have the hill country. We'll find shells all over the place. We're way inland or whatever, but this did used to be a sea. So it's not also saying that this Titan didn't do its thing, petrify, fall, and then a wave come or something changed so much to where there was a global, or maybe the realm got filled with water or something, and then that would have displaced shells on top of something, but to be comprised of them, like the limestone that you spoke of in Coral Castle that Edley Scallion used. Yes, there's a different delineation there. And if you can't find shells within that thing, then that's an issue. But you can find displaced shells on top of mountains and stuff, which
absolutely
may be another argument of theirs.
Well, even in the mainstream model, there are five dyings off, like five great cataclysms. Like the trilobites were once alive, they're not. You know, you've got these different things that are in the fossil record that tell us that there were previously creatures that are not here now. And, you know, the same they tell us goes for the dinosaurs, which I think is a myth fairy tale as well. But even the mainstream model is telling us that we've had these great cataclysms, and every civilization on Earth has the flood myths. And that's because the floods happened. And you, like you said, you can find, I've heard tales of seashells being found like up at the top of Everest, the tallest mountain on Earth. So yeah, things will get deposited. And if you think of the Ring of Fire, and you think of how powerful a volcano is, I think they said that the tsunami that happened in Thailand was an underwater volcano that erupted. I know that the island of Santorini, which I visited in Greece, it's in the Kyklade islands, and that was an amazing volcano that is still active. But it blew its top in, I think it was 1700 BC or somewhere thereabouts. So 3,700 years ago, this thing blew off and it caused tsunamis through the whole Mediterranean. It wiped out the Minoan Empire overnight. And so that's one volcano. Now imagine if the Ring of Fire were suddenly to be active on a grand scale, and we had 1,000 volcanoes all erupting violently all at the same time, spewing up ash. There's so much that could account for as far as what we find around the world when it comes to geological finds and flood evidence. I was about to mention Mount St. Helens. When it erupted, geologists went in there after the fact, and they were looking at the slurry flows of the combinations of the water. I think it was snow-capped, and you have all of the volcanic ash, and then that's flowing. And normally when if you look at the timelines for sedimentary layering, they've got all the different periods, the Jurassic period and the Permian and the Cambrian, all of these names, right? And each one is older than the next. And they claim to know how old the fossils are based on the layer they're found in. And then they claim to know how old the layer is based on the fossils that are found in it. So that's circular reasoning. But regardless, you're talking about always talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of years to form these layers. And the more detailed and fine the layers are, the longer period of time it's said to have taken to form. Well, when Mount St. Helens erupted, it created like 10 yards thick of or more of slurry flows that had all of this fine sedimentary layering in a matter of hours. So just that find in and of itself tells us that, okay, it may not be wrong what they've said about the sedimentary layering worldwide, but at least we have very, very clear anomalies that suggest that what they're telling us takes tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of years can happen in the blink of an eye, literally. So I think these are kinds of things we're never taught about. We're taught all of this stuff about the cycle of petrogenesis. It starts off as sedimentary layering, and then it becomes the metamorphic rock. And then that pressure becomes so great that the metamorphic rock melts into magma, which is lava, and that's pushed upward. And then it, you know, volcanoes, and we get the runoff. That's the cycle of petrogenesis. And everything within geology is explained within those simple terms. And then you've got the tectonic activity that's, you know, talking about the creation of mountains. But if biogeology is a thing, and it in my studies, it appears very much to be, regardless of whether that's a titanic elephant, there's so many anomalous things in the geological record that contradict the mainstream narratives. It's not stuff that we're ever exposed to in high school or even university education. So that's where the paradigm blindness comes. It's people just are literally trained not to see it. And that gets back to what you asked a little while ago about the idea of heartstone, you know, phenomenon. So this, I believe, is a heart. And if you look at, I've got playlists on my channel where I've gone into detail about these. So the way this began was after I started making the discoveries with the mountain and the limestone, and I just went, okay, I'm going to look at everything with new eyes now because I don't know what's what, and I don't know what to believe. And just because I've been told something is true doesn't mean it is. And so I'm just going to like see what I recognize. So I'd go out, and it was just an adventure. Like it was psychedelic. Like the whole world I was seeing through different eyes. And I wasn't making claims about it. I was just inquiring and asking questions. And so at one point I got frustrated because I was watching Roger do his usual thing where he's tapping at the screen and he's pointing at a nondescript rock and he's claiming with absolute 100% certainty that this is the toe of a something or other, or this is the first digit of a what would have been a 50-foot giant. And okay, maybe it's true, but the way he was talking about it irritated the heck out of me because it was there was no room for error. He was just presenting this fact. And then he was talking about things in this way that was so, he was just talking about it as if it was a matter of fact, you know? And I'm like, I know anatomy, I know histology, and it's still far-fetched what he's saying. he's got DNA analyses claiming that it's humanoid, and I, you know, DNA, I found out those analyses, you know, what they used to determine that? PCR. Right. So how valid are those?
They're reliable. Right?
And even if PCR were valid for what, you know, it was being analyzed for, the question is, you know, were the samples tainted potentially as well? So I don't know if there's any truth to that, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt, and he's got the lab analyses on his website. And so I thought, okay, this is cool. He's taken it to the next level. There's some credibility here, and he seems to know what he's talking about when it comes to some things. But there were other times where I'm just like, he's got this one rock that he claims is a duck's head. And it looks like a duck's head. I'll give him that. But he's claiming it as a fact. And he's like, it is what it is. You can see it, you know? And he's like, this is the that, and that's the this. And I'm like, okay, well, let's grant him, for, you know, benefit of the doubt. A duck has a duck bill, which is completely different structure and tissue than the skull, which is bone, right? So we have cartilage, we have a nose. That's the thing. People see all these mountains and the laying on the back. So, okay, so the nose petrified in the same way that the rest of the head petrified. You know, you have to, there's so many things that you just have to buy if you're gonna get on board with that theory, instead of the idea that, well, yeah, maybe some of the mountains were trees, some of them were titans, but to every single mountain range that you see that looks like something, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was. So you need way more info for that. And I don't know where I was going with that, but that,
no, it's an interesting point. Have you heard of the sort of the Colossus of Rome idea, to where people say that that's a flash frozen individual, to where not only can these not only happen in hundreds of thousands of year scales, but if the conditions are right, things can be flash frozen, petrified.
Which that's one of the giant that's like reaching down. And
yeah. And
you know,
guys looked into it and found blood running again, iron. He does similar work to you. I'll find the video actually and send it to you so you can, take a look at it. But it's interesting to think of flash freezing.
Years ago on it. And it, you know, my question is, why would hair petrify to solid stone?
Well, and that's
still
the thing.
Look
maybe
like
it was some sort
to
of
me, it looks like a big sculpture.
And I don't disagree with you at all, because again, if it is sort of a skull thing that would have eroded the cartilage, and again, great point on the bills and the different materials, it all makes sense. And maybe it is one of those indicators.
Eyeballs.
That, of course. And maybe it is perhaps, again, just another data point to consider that the realm was totally different at that time, and that maybe conditions, you know, plants were red and fucking there was nitrogen or more oxygen than nitrogen. So maybe it was sort of... or the other way around. Maybe it was just sort of conditions were completely different, to where circumstances that we would identify now and be able to say that's what happened were not like that at all. And so it's sort of like trying to put a puzzle together upside down. Like, you're not given the face of it with a clear picture of even, you know, the environment at the time. Because because the conditions, we don't see shit like that running around. These huge mountain sized elephants, or these trees that touch whatever, you know, wherever they went. We don't have biology like that anymore. So something was different. You know, the realm was different in some capacity to a dramatic. And I've got actually a fun little theory that you and I are going to go over that you've inspired me to think of. That the Titans may have been the birth of humanity. And they sort of gave themselves up so that we could be incubated and born. This is the Hopi talk about coming out of the earth, right? A lot of people talk about coming out. Anyway, we're going to talk about
that. Also talk about cataclysm and petrification. You got the Blue Star Kachina and all of that stuff with the Hopi. And, yeah, I mean, that was the thing. Once I got into this, it was just like one thing after another. I don't take any individual data point as proof of anything. But when you start to have hundreds or thousands of data points that are all lining up with a particular theory, it becomes more and more compelling. And so that's how I see it. You know, the trees are one. The work I've done on the mountain is one. I thought there'd be a lot more coming along after me. I haven't really explored much outside of this region. I've been in Spain for 13 years and I've seen very little of it because I'm always working and I've been raising family. And I thought that more people would kind of take what I had done as a template and start applying that to other sites. But instead, it's just photographs of things that look like a face and then claims that it is a face. It's frustrating. But like, if you think of a forest and you think of how many trees are in a forest, and then you think of what percentage of animals are in the forest, it's a tiny, tiny fraction in comparison to the forest. So if you have the big trees and the stumps are all the remains of trees, and I've shown lots and lots of evidence on my channel for the big trees, I think that's the most slam dunk evidence that's out there. The stuff I've done with the mountain is compelling. A lot of people are totally on board with it. There's a lot of people who believe it more than I believe it. but the heart stones, that's also a very interesting phenomenon, which we can get to more of in a bit. But the, you know, I lost the thread again. The forests in relationship to the amount of creatures there are, you would expect that there would be way more evidence for the big trees than for petrified gigantic creatures. And I think that's absolutely true. When you look at what's out there, so much of it is clearly tree, but there's not a lot of people that have done in-depth analysis when it comes to the subject of Titans.
What's interesting too is that, you know, the trees are so compelling that they sort of stair-step us into the environment of putting our mindset, like you said, about reworking our mind to be able to see our realm as so much different that then we can picture entities being that big. Because I think we get some challenges with the scope of what you're talking about here, because you were walking around in an eyeball and it was big around you. Like, you can imagine just going out for a walk and that thing being on the other side of a cliff or something and then just opening its eye and you're just standing there like, holy shit, this massive... It's terrifying.
Yeah, like Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah.
Jack and the Beanstalk. Paul Bunyan. Yeah, we have all of these myths in our
cutting down
past.
Big trees, by the way.
Cutting down big trees with this big blue ox, right?
And
which how big was he? He was as big as the mountains.
And why was the ox blue? Was it a different condition? Was it eating green grass or red grass and that made it blue? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think we live in a I've been on board with the holographic universe idea since I read Talbot's book like 30 years ago or however long ago.
Yeah.
And the idea that reality is fractal is just self-evident. If you study vibration, sound, everything, it's repeating patterns that get bigger and bigger and smaller and smaller. And so a previous era where everything was gigantic and now we've been downsized and there was some kind of a cataclysm. I mean, we're talking about antediluvian times. We're talking about before the flood, before the time of Noah. People who've gone into like Jason from Archaics' material, he's talking about the Phoenix event. You've got Medusa, which I think is just a metaphoric representation of like a plasma apocalypse kind of event. It's been called the EMCO, the electromagnetic plasma changeover event as well.
God, that's a dope name for a band.
Yeah. EMCO. Yeah. You know, so there are all of these theories that touch on these cataclysms that turn things to stone. And yes. I think that's not by accident. You were talking about the eye also being inside the eye. I went up there that first time and I found literally a list of 10 different things. Some of them were highly specific, and I can show some visual examples of that in a moment. But I was up there again, maybe a year later, with some friends who, one of them was Andreas Exertis, who's a YouTuber, and Victor Bugay. They both came to visit, and he also had a YouTube channel that was taken down. So I took them up there and I was showing them all the stuff that I discovered. And then at one point there's this section that is right in the center of the cave where the eye would be, right? The eye isn't there. Otherwise that would be really suspicious, you know, big eye looking at you. So whatever turned it to stone would have blown out the eye perhaps, or it would have deteriorated in one way or another. But right there where it should have been, there's this shape that looks like a wave that's about to crash. And that I theorized early on was the remains of the eyeball, because it was perfectly placed and it was shaped like the backside of an eye that had blown out. And then when you get up there on that structure, because you can climb up onto it and you look back towards the back of the cave, it comes down and it goes to a central point, which goes back into the cave. And I was like, that is looking a hell of a lot like an optic nerve.
Optical
and
nerve,
I was showing them this. And then one of the two of them noticed that the structure that I was standing on was covered. The whole backside of it was quartz crystal. And I was like, so I had already before that theorized, you know, with my theories of biogeology and whatnot, that things that are fat turn to quartz. When it comes to the trees, the sap turns to quartz. And it depends what color it is and what the makeup is depends on whatever the original constitution of the material was and the method of petrification. But the idea that fat, ligament, tendon, disc, eyeball, all of these things, and even blood plasma turned to quartz, I already had that idea before I went up there with these guys. Just a little aside, when it comes to the blood composition, if you look at blood, the makeup of blood, like 45% of blood is the red blood cells. 55% is your blood plasma. If you think about red blood cells, the reason they're red is because of hemoglobin, and hemoglobin binds to iron, and iron is red. So there's your red earth that's all over this mountain, and the iron ore, which is on these rocks, caked onto the sides of them, or in these fractal-like Swiss cheese channels, you've got this iron ore that's right there in the middle of the channels. And sometimes those channels are actually lined with quartz. So if you have a blood vessel that petrifies, in my theories, anything that's fat is going to petrify to varying types of quartz. That lines up perfectly. Well, then I started looking at blood composition more closely. And if you centrifuge blood and you get the red blood cells out and what's left is plasma, plasma is 55%. If you remove all the water so that all that's left is your electrolytes and your different components of the blood plasma, it's called, in humans, it's called human serum albumin. If you remove all of the water from human serum albumin, you have quartz crystal flakes. So even blood would produce quartz. So anything fatty, things like almond oil, fish oil, these all of that stuff that's yellowy and oily, that's going to be, those are long chain fatty acids, and that's going to be quartz in my theories. So when I was up in the cave with these guys, one of them noticed that the backside of this whole structure was covered in quartz, and I'd never noticed it because it's so dirty. But you can get along and look at it from the side, and you can see that it's literally a 10-inch thick layer of quartz that's covering the entire backside. So if you think about the eye and the whites of the eye, that's called sclera. And if you were to pull an eye out, the whole backside of the eye is this fatty, yellowy, chunky. It's the white is sclera, and then there's this fatty backside, and then that becomes the optic nerve. And that's attaching into the eye socket. And that's exactly what is up there. So after that second, you know, that visit with those guys, all of a sudden I had another almost 10 very specific correlations. So just in the eye socket itself, its location, the shape, everything, there's almost 20 correlations just with the eye. And that's to say nothing of the ear.
Jeez. So you really could go to this thing's coochie with due diligence and kind of check it out. You
it's
know,
laying it on its stomach. Exists. You have to dig. Well,
you know, you seem like a committed individual. So I would say, you know, there's a will, there's a way. Absolutely incredible, yeah. Man. This is mind-blowing. Like this
spelunking,
is
spelunking orifices.
Oh, yeah. That's actually a great name for a band. You know. Damn.
Cave diving. Takes on a whole new meaning.
Right. I think spelunking needs to be in there somewhere just because it's a fun word to say, you know?
I've got one video called Spelunking Titanic Trees, which is absolutely amazing. Have you ever heard of the Action Adventure Twins?
Yeah, like the cartoon?
No, they've got a channel that's like 700,000 subs, and they're like the highest level spelunkers you'd ever want to encounter. They go into the deepest caves in the world. They'll go down 500-600 feet and then go through these snaking channels that you wouldn't even want to begin to go down because they're terrifying. And then they'll go down another 500 feet, and I had never seen any footage of this stuff, and someone linked it to me one day, and I was looking and I'm like, holy shit, this is the inside of trees. Like there are trees, I'll show some examples of this as well, but there are trees that they tap into the groundwater, and then that comes up through the root structure, and then it'll come out like there'll be a knot in the side of the tree, and it'll come out of the tree in some cases with pressure like a fire hydrant.
I've seen this.
There are other examples of trees in the rainforest where they'll come and they'll hack it with a machete and it just starts spurting water out. And that's because they're tapped into these. Well, if you think of a tree that size, now imagine a tree that's miles wide at the base. How tall would that be? I don't know. You could do the math, right? You look at the ratio of width of a trunk to height of a tree. You're talking things that stretch 10, 20 more miles into the sky. I don't know how big they were ultimately. Like you said before, it's hard to wrap your head around and to even fathom this kind of size. That's where the work of Hangman 1128 is essential. And he's got the best boots on the ground footage in high definition of anybody in the world, documenting some of the most amazing sites for the big trees. I went and visited him this last summer. I was there in July, and he and I went to the Black Hills of South Dakota. And he took me, he's been doing this for years now. And so he already knows all the great sites. So he took me to all the best sites in this week that we traveled together. And then we went to the Garden of the Gods as well in Colorado Springs after that, which is also a tree. And it is undeniable. And I've got loads of footage now on my own channel. I did a recap of the whole trip, but then I've got about 10 or 12 different 1 to 2 minute videos of just on site, like highlights. So people who are short on time, watch those videos. And if you can understand what you're seeing, you will know unequivocally that the great trees were real. And to like imagine how big something like that was, something this size would have been maybe 100 feet across, right? If you're thinking about it in relationship to the size of a tree of today. And when you're there in person, the HD footage is incredible, but when you're there in person, there's no denying it. There'll be fallen trees, smaller versions, you know, that are all around of the same species of tree that are breaking down and decomposing or have recently fallen or are still alive. And you look at those pieces of them and everything, and you can hold them up, and there'll be another version of the exact same thing that's 50 to 100 feet wide, and it's identical in every way. And then you look down at the ground, and there's all this debris of, you know, decomposing trees. And there are times where it happened many times in that week where I had to reach out and touch it because I could not tell if it was petrified tree or regular tree. And very often it was stone, and I thought it was real. It was wood. So, I mean, it's all wood. It's just petrified wood.
Different states. Yeah, I've seen that video, actually. It's the one where you guys are in front of Mount Rushmore, but it's way off to the side, as if you're like, it's in the background. You're like, yeah, a lot of people are here to see this, but we're not here to see this piece of shit. And you're like, here, let's go over here. And you walked off like a way away from the thing. And I just thought it was brilliant. And that was the one where I saw you start to explain the sap being quartz. And it just, again, threw my mind into this whole realm of that's what all the precious stones and minerals and things like this are, these giants that have just decomposed and all these minerals have just sort of gathered and moved around. And it's just fascinating to think about. And then when you're walking through tubes like that, or these people are spelunking, which I find terrifying, which is why I've not heard of your action boys. It is just these tubes of an ancient organic, I mean, tree, but creature, man. And we're talking Avatar type shit here now, right? That giant, we could live in it type thing. Shit just flying around, glowing. Really cool.
It's clearly something that grew. And the mainstream narrative is layers compressed and then water carved out channels. And that can be debunked a whole variety of different ways.
It doesn't explain everything.
When it comes to the mountain here and the fractal limestone, it debunks itself because you have a larger channel that bifurcates, that's the term for, like, when you look at blood vessels, you've got your aorta, which is the biggest in the body, and then it branches off into smaller and smaller blood vessels. It's fractal, right? That is called bifurcation. That's what these channels are doing in the limestone. So you would have to believe that the water carved out the initial one perfectly round, right? You never see any partially carved out. They're always completed. And then they bifurcated and went off in 90 degree angles in other different directions. And it's just impossible that water did that. Because the mainstream story with limestone is that basically you've got, you know, acid rain and different, you know, the rain is breaking down the mineral content of the stone, and it's creating rivulets. And then those rivulets are getting wider and wider over time. That would make sense from above, but it doesn't make sense for something coming in at 90 degree angle and then bifurcating in different directions. And then when you look at the stuff from the Action Adventure Twins, they've got these massive channels going down and then breaking off, look just like root structures of a gigantic tree, right? In every way, but the insides are not smoothed out at all. They'll be jagged. It'll be like these sheer cliff walls going up, but it's not smooth. So there's no way that was eroded by water. Otherwise, it would be smoothed out. So it's just thing after thing after thing that lines up with these theories. And I never would have guessed that would happen when I got into this research. It's just been it's been such an adventure to dig into. But at the same time now, it's been 7-8 years since I started this process. And Mike started around the same time, Hangman 1128. He and I were both producing videos. Neither one of us knew who each other were. And then I saw his videos and I'm like, holy shit, fat turns to quartz, but so does sap. And it's so obvious when you see the footage. If you understand that the sap petrifies to quartz, and then you understand how tree grain works and how the swirls of knots work and how the layering is and what it looks like in its varying stages of decomposition, all these different things, you see it. It's all there to perfection from the macro to the micro. And you can pick up something small and it looks exactly like the thing that's big. So it's been amazing. When I saw his stuff, I'm like, I was actually more convinced of his work than my own. You know, I was just like immediately on board with the things he was showing because it was self-evident. There was no doubting. And I thought, well, that's a great thing, because if the giant trees were a thing, then it's far more plausible than that the giant animals were also a thing. And so the work dovetails, and I think that's why he and I have connected well and become friends over the years.
So cool. Next time you come out here and you guys are hanging out, let me know. I'll take a drive up there. I haven't been up there yet, but I'd love to. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll connect again at some point.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I tell you what, we are going to go ahead and just let everybody know that we're going to move on to the afterthought, and we're going to share screen. He's going to pull a bunch of really cool stuff up, and then I've got a few theories that we're going to run by here, and it's going to just be awesome. So check the link down below for the way to support your favorite show. We've got the hangouts, all the replays, and the afterthoughts that occur there. Come do some hangouts with us. We'll definitely have Mike join us for one of those, and that'll be awesome, dude. It's a whole group of folks. They're just the coolest people ever. So all the ways to find him again. It's amazing. All the ways to find him located down in the show description. And again, we're going to kick it to this afterthought. But before we do that, my friend, we always ask everybody, you get the last word here. What gets you out of bed every morning and keeps you moving forward, man?
What gets me out of bed? The alarm clock. It's just a nonstop adventure trying to figure this place out. And the more you learn, I've been so humbled in the last years. Some people, when they discover the kinds of things that I've discovered, and they it's like they just run, you know, full bore straight ahead. I've got to share this with the world. It's, you know, and I find the more I learn, the more cautious I am about what I say, and the more humility I have, because I realize how often I've been wrong about things, and things that I thought meant one thing didn't. So it's just a never-ending adventure when it comes to trying to figure it all out and understand how this place works, because it sure don't work the way they told us.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.